This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 5 for the week of August 31st, 2020, Justin Firesheets. Well, hey everybody, this is Van, and just before we get started with the interview with Justin, I just wanted to give a big ask. I know that a lot of you are subscribing to our Instagram feed, our Twitter feed, and our Facebook page, and if you're not, please take the time to jump on over to one of those or all of them and go ahead and follow us there. And also, if you could do me a big favor, if you could go to iTunes and give us a great rating and also maybe give us a review, that would be great. It really does help the famous or infamous algorithms. I hate asking, but I really want to get this podcast out there. I'm really enjoying kind of getting back in the rhythm of doing podcasts all the time. We have some great guests lined up. You're really going to enjoy the rest of this season. Here's our interview with Justin. Thank you. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I'm Van Metschke, and on the Zoom call, this is how we do it. Here's the little back end of this whole thing. We do this on Zoom. On the other end of the Zoom call is my buddy, Justin Firesheets. How you doing, Justin?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I figure you and I hadn't talked in a while, and so this is a good excuse to hang out a little bit.
You know, I'll tell you, since we can't see each other in person and we can't go to conferences, doggone it, I will settle for a Zoom call with you. I'll take whatever I can get at this point.
I appreciate that. Well, yeah, I was thinking about that the other day when you commented on Todd Elliott's podcast that I'm like, oh man, I gotta talk to Justin. So it's been long enough. So, for those of you who don't know Justin, which I can't believe you don't, if you're in church tech and have ever gone to a conference or anything, the church conference world is all Justin all the time, as far as I'm concerned. He's pretty much at everything. And Justin, you are the production director at Church of the Highlands in Birmingham, Alabama, and all parts thereof, correct?
You got it, man. That's it.
So how many campuses do you guys have?
That's almost a trick question right now, because
500.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, you know, with Corona season being what it is, we've consolidated a couple because of, you know, lower attendance. And so they're kind of merging in with other places for the time being, but right. We're also still working on plans to launch in other parts of the state where we previously did not have a campus. And so we're still pursuing that, but if everybody was meeting right now, I think we'd have like 23. Wow. But yeah. I think we're at like 19 active at the moment.
Yeah.
For now, to change.
Are you guys, and I swear, folks, we're not just going to talk about coronavirus, but we kind of have to get it out of the way since it is kind of the elephant in the room right at the time we are recording this. Are you guys on any of your campuses, or are you all still social distancing, or what's kind of the state of affairs with church right now?
Yep. So at the moment we are in person. We resumed in-person gatherings, full time at the beginning of August. And so, we are back in person. We're not doing an RSVP system. We still have the ability to kind of just with the size of our rooms to space people out as needed or pursue overflow scenarios just to maintain whatever the local requirements are for distancing. Again, we have a couple of portable locations that are not meeting right now. And so we've encouraged people in those places to attend a permanent facility nearby, just from the standpoint of it doesn't maybe make sense to split resources right now the way it did 6 months ago when we had to have those campuses because of capacity issues.
Right.
Not in that boat right now. So right now we're about 25% of our in-person attendance numbers from pre-corona. I don't know how that stacks up with other churches across the country, but we've been steadily growing week by week. But there is a very real, you know, understanding that things aren't going to go back to normal the way they used to be. Church is going to be different for a long time. We've got to change programming and customize more of what we're doing for an online audience and understand that we can't just snap our fingers and expect the room to be full. You know, that's not going to be realistic for probably a year, you know?
Right.
And so it's a new way of doing church and a new mindset. But at the end of the day, it's not about numbers in a full room and what I can do, blah, blah, blah. It's about people having the opportunity to get their lives changed and being able to experience the power of God. And it's our job to help create that atmosphere, whether there's 20 people in the room or 2,000, you know, the size of the attendance doesn't determine effort or impact. And so we're going to keep on trucking it week in and week out, knowing that if God brought them the first time, stirring them to come, then it'll happen again. Just, you know, whatever that timing needs to be.
Right. And you guys, of course, were already big online. You had a huge online presence.
Yeah.
Had all that worked out, obviously, for many reasons. So the transition was more for your people than it was for you, right? I mean, you guys.
Yeah, but at there were still some programming things that we weren't offering online just because we really wanted people to value the benefit of being here in person, you know, and there's always been different schools of thought regarding online church. One is, you know, that's people's home. So you create it specifically for them and cater and customize and so forth. The other idea is that the online audience really should be a transient group of people that are normally planted at a campus as much as possible if they're geographically able to do that. But right. Then, you know, if they're on vacation or sick or out of town because of work or whatever, you know, people are online for a week or two, but then the idea is that they come back to an in-person gathering. Again, there's always going to be a group of people that are overseas military or, you know, the invalid type of people with health issues. That's going to exist. But our leadership had really wanted to encourage people to come in person as much as possible. So we weren't creating very much specifically for the online audience. And over the last 5+ months, that has naturally had to change, and it will continue to be the reality moving forward of how do we take as much as we can and make it available for the online person. Again, knowing that there's a huge segment of our people that aren't going to be back in person for a very long time, but they still need access to this. So how do we make some of these conferences available online on a regular basis, or, you know, midweek events or church membership classes. Even now we've started doing baptism differently, where you can schedule an appointment at the nearest campus and come in during the week and get baptized. Well, that never would have been the case before. It would have been a mass baptism experience on a scheduled day, and a lot of people are in line and we run them through and we've got a filter, but you know, that's just not the reality now.
Right.
And I think we all have to realize, as many churches have at this point, that the vision doesn't change. How you implement the vision sometimes has to change. Yeah. So there's a vision that we want believers to have a meaningful baptism experience, but how we advertise for that and how we pull that off, that may have to change because the reality of society is completely different now than it was 6 months ago.
Right.
Same thing with, you know, church membership classes or, you know, services or small groups or whatever, you know? So like, we used to completely discourage online small groups because we want people to gather in person and build relationships. Well, you can't mandate that now. And so now when our new small group directory goes online for this fall, like the first filter that you will be able to sort by is, are you looking for a group in person, online, or a hybrid? Like what suits your experience? And that never would have been a filter before, but we have to change the way we're doing churches now. I know in the church world, you know, the to invoke Charles Darwin would probably be slanderous, but it really is the idea of you have to adapt in order to survive. It is a survival of the fittest mentality, where as the times change, you have to be willing to make changes as well. If you are stubborn and dig in your heels and refuse to change your methodology or your programming, it's going to be really hard to be successful over time. And that's just where we're at now. The way we used to do things isn't the way we can do them right now. And we have to change that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, you know, it's really interesting to me. Pretty early on in this, I was at a church here in Southern California, and I was talking to the pastor, and it was a mainline church. It was a Presbyterian church, and I was talking to them about doing some work for them. Just as an aside, he said, "Hey, I also, before you leave, I want to talk to you about our video system in our sanctuary, because even though we plan on coming back we're going to install a video system because we know that the online is never going away now at this point.
Yeah.
No matter what happens. So I think, you know, a church like yours that's serving thousands and thousands of people across the whole state, you know, obviously had to turn on a dime and say, okay, now we've got to put all this other stuff. But even the small, tiny churches that are all over the world really have had to go, oh, hey, we've got to pivot, or our congregation's not going to be, we're not feeding our congregation. We're not doing our commission.
And, you know, a lot of people probably had the luxury for a while of really just focusing on one audience or the other. You know, for years, maybe you haven't been online. So you only focused on who was in the room, and online was an afterthought.
Right.
And then now, you know, the last 6 months or so probably have been exclusively focusing on the online audience and how do we make that experience as good as possible. But there's going to be a day that we have to be able to focus on both.
Yeah.
Because the people that do come back in person don't want to get a worse experience than they had online. Like you can't put all of your energy into making the online experience great, and then people come back and it's just horrible. And so now the challenge for the tech director is, how do I manage my time and expectations during that new reality, trying to keep two perhaps diametrically opposed audiences happy?
Yeah.
Like, and so it really drives those of us in that role. Sometimes we're going to have to be the ones to initiate the conversation and say, okay, boss, leadership, if push comes to shove and I have limited time and energy, where is my priority? Right. Which group of people are we serving first? Who gets the resources first? Because I can't be everywhere being all things to all people, as Paul would have said, you know, thousands of years ago. Like,
yeah, and, well, and two, there's a lot. I mean, I don't know. I know you talk to probably as many people as I do, if not more. But I'm talking to a lot of technical directors, production managers, worship pastors that are like, they're putting in a ridiculous amount of time each week,
sure,
to do all this stuff. And you know, my advice to them from the get-go was, you have to tell your leadership right away that this is not sustainable in perpetuity.
Right.
You cannot do that.
Because right now, you know, maybe I'm not running a regular Sunday service, but I'm spending a lot of time every week recording things for ministries, or we're editing more videos or more on-demand content or more podcasts or a midweek prayer service or an on-demand thing. Like, there's a lot that's going on, and people are never going to realize the amount of time it takes to do that kind of stuff if we don't speak up and talk about it.
Right.
And because our leadership needs to know the cost of decisions, not just in resource costs, but in people equity. Like, what does it take in manpower and sweat and energy to do something? Because if I never, like you said, if I never speak up and talk about this, there's just an assumption that I can do this and it's fully sustainable. So now we've created this hunger for all of this content, for all of these ministries. And then when we resume in-person services, there's an expectation that I just add that 12-hour workday back into my life and schedule and train the volunteers and do rehearsals again. Like, and that may not be sustainable. And so maybe I'm not in an environment at my church right now where I have to track my time as an hourly employee. Maybe that's not how my pay is done. But there would probably be benefit in trying to keep tabs on where my time goes on a weekly basis, because at some point I need to be able to have a conversation with my ministry leader and say, look, it takes me this amount of time to do X. If I am still supposed to be doing that and adding other things to my duties, I'm damaging myself, I'm damaging my family, I'm damaging my spiritual life. That can't be a sustainable expectation moving forward. We've got to figure out what to cut back on, or we have to be willing to invest more people resources into helping fulfill the vision that we're now adding to our plate.
Well, and I think, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this, and you may have even talked about this at conferences. I probably heard you speak this, is that your leadership doesn't want you to burn out. It is not advantageous to the ministry of the church or your leadership personally for you to burn out and then blow up and yeah. something bad happened, or leave the ministry or whatever. So even though you may think that you need to, I just got to suck this up. Your leadership doesn't know. One thing I learned from 20 years in full-time ministry is that the majority of pastors that you work with and work for have absolutely no idea how much time you invest to get everything to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
As a production manager, tech director, they have no idea.
And people that don't understand technology, period, don't understand what goes into making it work. It's just the idea, well, can't you just flip a switch and do that? Or isn't there a preset for that? Or, you know, there's not a template you can use. Well, maybe sometimes there is a really easy, simple way to do it, but a lot of times there might not be. And I've got to create it from scratch, and people don't understand that unless we have the dialogue. Now, I can't expect my senior pastor to understand every nuance of my job. It's not necessarily his job to do that, just like it's not really my job to understand every part of what he has to do every week with a sermon prep or a hospital visit or whatever else. But I still have to be willing to bring that information to the table. Because a lot of times we assume expectations that may not actually be there.
Right.
We think we're supposed to do something a certain level or a certain way or a certain priority, but our expectations or assumptions may not be in line with what our leadership has to begin with. And if we aren't having that dialogue, we could be putting all of our time into creating X. They think that we're creating Y. And then we get to the end of the process and realize that we've completely missed each other. And now we've spent all of this energy on something that may not have been a priority in the first place.
Absolutely.
But I can't expect people that don't understand my job to keep asking me about what I'm doing and what I need and how you're feeling. And is this too much? And are you overworked? And are you taking enough of a break? Like there should be a level of expectation that I think is realistic, that as adults, we are all able to self-manage.
Well, you know,
I should know boundaries and limits and be able to communicate them to somebody else.
Well, our friend Dennis Troy always said, you know, I don't want my family or my kids to hate Jesus in the church because I can't manage my own time.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that, you know. Well, you know what? You and I could talk about this and we will get back to this. But before we do that, I wanted to just, a lot of people don't know your background, where you came from. You know, how you got to where you are now. Now, how long have you been with Churchill Highlands?
11 and a half years. And let me say this, when you cut me off, I thought you were going to like a sponsor ad read or something.
No,
before we get into this, let's honor our sponsor.
Nobody sponsors the show. I would love, by the way, anybody listening who's a manufacturer or whatever, you want to sponsor the show, hit me up. Van@thesoundbooth.com. I'm there.
Van needs a new sailboat.
I've
been at Highlands since February of 2009.
Wow. It doesn't seem like you're old enough.
Well, I started when I was 11.
You're going to be in your 50s and 60s, and you're still going to look like you're in your 20s. So you're blessed with
that. Let that be the case. I keep my hair short so you can't see the gray hair coming in. I can name each hair after a campus or a conference that we have done.
So you've been there for 11 years, but how did you get there? What was like, how did you start out in tech? What was your first, you know, like how did you get involved in technology and kind of realize that this was the path that you wanted to go down?
Well, it's interesting enough because this was never the path that I wanted to go down. You know, when I was in high school, I had a buddy that was doing audio stuff at the church we went to in Atlanta, and I would help him out from time to time, and I enjoyed it. At the time, I thought about, hey, maybe I feel called into ministry. But at that time mid to late 90s, all I knew of ministry was missionary. Nope, not going to do that. Not doing the mud hut kind of a thing.
Right.
Worship. Nope, not going to do that because I'm not musical. Youth pastor. Heck no. Like 0% chance that I work with teenagers. And then senior pastor. And it was like, well, I don't want to do that because I don't want to have the weight of having to figure out a sermon every week and, you know, hospital visits. And like, there's no way I could do that. So I filed away in the back of my mind, ministry, that's just maybe an idea, but that's just really not it for me. But I started late in high school. I started doing public address announcing for some of our sports teams. Like I played some sports, but when there were other ones in season that I wasn't playing, I would be the PA guy, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, you know, maybe this could be a career for me, doing something in sports media. And so when I went to college, I did it with the intent of becoming the next great sports center anchor. That was my goal.
Awesome.
I wanted to get into sports media and TV and do that. And I thought that would be awesome because I love sports, love being around it.
And folks, if you always hear me say that I'm in the 3% of technical people that's an extrovert, I have on the one of the other people in the 3% that is an extrovert.
Well, no. Let's draw a distinction here. There's a difference between being extroverted and outgoing. Yeah. I can be outgoing, but honestly, I really am introverted in that I draw my strength and I get replenished like being by myself. Like I love being around people and talking and conversation, and I love speaking at conferences, but man, it drains the fire out of me.
Oh, but you know? Yeah. Well, this is something though that I'm exactly the same way. The way I get energized is literally being by myself in the dark, yeah, watching a movie on the couch at 1 o'clock in the morning, just kind of unwinding, whatever, you know. And I can be on, I mean, you've been with me many, many times. I can be on for 10 hours a day if I have to be.
Yeah.
But at the end of that day, I want to crawl into a hole.
Absolutely. Yes. But you know, like you, I'm one of the tech people that I don't curl into a ball or break out in hives at the idea of talking to people.
Right. Yeah. So, I think that's really my point.
So that's really where the comfort zone is for me, I suppose. But
right. Okay. So high school yeah, sports, so when, sports
high,
casting.
High, yeah. High school to college, you know, to get into sports media. And so I jumped into that with both feet in college, electronic media. I got involved again with athletics at the university doing public address announcing. And then they really liked the job I did. So I was asked to be, to start doing some play-by-play radio for sports, which I'd never done before. And being like the studio host for some other sports. And I'd always grown up, I grew up in Atlanta, loved watching Braves games and listening to their announcers. And like, I could, you know, mimic some of the stuff that they were doing. So some of that idea had come a little bit naturally to me to doing broadcasting, even though I'd never done it formally. But I started doing it a lot in college and said, you know what, maybe, you know, TV sportscaster isn't the direction. Maybe I just really want to do play-by-play and broadcasting and announcing like this. And so that's where I started to direct my energy, got a lot more experience with that. And then when I graduated college, I was hired full-time at that university to oversee all of the broadcasting for the athletic department. So it wasn't just on-air talent, and I was doing 7 sports and 120 games probably from August to May. But it was also building out kind of a creative and broadcast department from scratch. So I was doing, I started a radio show once a week. We were doing a couple of TV shows. I was creating content for a new video board that had been put in. I was doing highlight videos for some of the sports teams. And we started, like right when I started working there, it was in early 2003. When online video streaming barely existed. Like it was a concept, but it didn't really exist en masse. Like everything video online was all on demand, pre-recorded. Right. But my boss said, hey, listen, I've heard of this new technology idea. I met this company. I want you to talk to him and figure some of this stuff out. I was like, okay. So I had to learn how to do online video streaming in early 2003, and we got it going, and we were the most prolific university in the country at doing live video online. Not only were we doing sporting events, but every coach had an in-season weekly live show that we would do online for interviews and things like that. And so I was young and single and bored. So it's like, if I've got the time to do it and if I've got the energy to do it, then I'm going to do it. I'm creating ideas and all this kind of stuff. And was there for 4.5 years until the new boss that I had, we did not see eye to eye about some things. And I was young and foolish enough to share my feelings to him about him over speakerphone while he had a sponsor with him in his office that heard the whole thing And then I was soon invited to no longer be part of the team there.
That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll do it. And so, you know, being young and opinionated sometimes isn't the best combination. And so
rarely is.
And so from there, I actually then worked for a minor league baseball team in town, doing some electronic media, but doing a lot of print. I was media relations, sort of player appearances, website, IT, all of the print publications, designing and laying out the media guide in, I think we were like Quark Express 2.5, maybe, you know, or something like that.
Quark Express.
Anyway, so doing all that kind of stuff, using a lot of things that I'd learned at my previous stop and a whole lot more. And during all of this, I had been attending Highlands and I had been volunteering here off and on as my work schedule would allow. But as I was working more with the baseball team, you know, working 100 million hours a week for peanuts as a salary, it's like, you know, why am I doing this? Like, nobody cares what I do except for the advertising sales I do, which I hated. Right. So I'm creating my own standard of work ethic. If I left, they would replace me tomorrow with somebody younger and cheaper and probably not care. Like, I'm the only one that cares. Why am I doing this?
Right.
And so I started thinking back to years and years before the idea of church world. And I was like, no, there's no way I could ever work for a church. That just, there's no way I could do that. Well, one of my good friends at the time who was contracting with the baseball team, but also contracting at Highlands, in the web department, said, man, I really feel like Highlands could use somebody like you here in some capacity. I said, man, I just don't think that's a good fit. Well, I started going to a small group that was based on curriculum from John Bevere. It was called Driven by Eternity. And essentially the idea is like, you know, what's behind the decisions you make? Are you looking through an earthly perspective or are you looking through an eternal perspective? And that really just started messing with me more. Like, if I'm spending all of this time and energy on something, I really need to be putting it into something that matters. So maybe I do need to reach out to the church and see. So I reached out to somebody. Like, I knew the production manager, but, I mean, obviously his role was filled. So I reached out to somebody else and said, listen, here's my resume. I don't know if anything you guys do would ever intersect with my skill set. But, you know, let me know if maybe there's an opportunity. And not too long after that, the production manager, who was a friend, again, he was a friend of mine. We grabbed lunch one day and he said, hey, listen, I wanted to let you know that I just announced that I'm going to be leaving soon to go back to my home church. My position is going to be open and I think they're going to want to talk to you about it. I said, man, there's no way I could be a fit for this. Like, you've got years of experience. I'm from a completely different industry. I have no idea what I'm doing. There's no way I could be a qualified person for this job. And he said, well, if they reach out, just be willing to have the conversation and listen. Just at least be willing to listen. Okay, fine. I'll do that. And so we, you know, I had a conversation with the guy that would ultimately become my boss. And I explained some of my misgivings to him as well. And he said something that has stuck with me ever since. He said, I wouldn't expect you to know all the answers. I just need you to know where to go to find the answers.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I mean, if that's the expectation, like if I don't have to know everything on day one, I mean, I guess I could, you know, probably figure some of this stuff out. And right. I was getting more and more frustrated, you know, in baseball world, because it's the middle of ad sales season at this point, which I was just miserable asking people for money. And so, you know, they came back and offered me the job and I accepted the job. And even though I had volunteered at the church, I had only been in the production booth for more than 5 minutes at a time, maybe like twice. Because I was a camera op and I just never had any reason to go to the booth. I just went to whatever camera they assigned me for, and that was kind of the thing. So I get hired, and I shadowed in the booth on a Sunday. I came back on Tuesday so my predecessor could walk me through all of the wiring. how it was all put together, and I took copious notes, which I still have. Then on Wednesday, I went with him to our Auburn campus, which was about 2 hours away, to see the setup there and help install, you know, some piece of equipment there. And then he took off Thursday, Friday to pack and move, And then my first day as the guy was on Sunday.
Oh, good.
And so it wasn't just a Sunday, Van. It was anniversary Sunday.
Fantastic.
And that's always like the biggest non-Christmas, non-Easter day of the year. You know, there's special programming. People turn out. Like maybe you're giving away ice cream sandwiches at the door. Whatever. There's a big crowd, right? And there was a big crowd. That was our first non-Christmas, non-Easter Sunday of 10,000.
Wow.
As a church of four campuses. I had never run a service there before in my life. I had never directed cameras or run song lyrics. This was pre-planning center. So all the scheduling was done out of an Excel spreadsheet. I didn't even know any of the people on that spreadsheet. At the time I was hired, audio, video, and lighting were three separate departments. There was a full-time audio guy who reported to our worship pastor. I was the production manager at the time that handled just video. And I had a guy that worked for me that did production probably like, I don't know, 30, 40% of the time. And then he did graphic design the rest of his week because we were a smaller church staff at the time. And then the girl that did lighting, she probably spent at least half of her week helping out with other miscellaneous things throughout the church. So there really weren't a lot of full-time devoted technical staff. Again, four campuses and 10,000 people. It just really wasn't where the energy was going.
Right.
And so here I am, I'm trying to take other people's word for it that these volunteers that are getting scheduled on Sunday, that they know what they're doing. I've never met them. I don't have any idea if they're good or not. I'm looking around at people like something happens. And I'm like, is that supposed to happen? Like, is that how that transition's supposed to work? I don't know. You know, so there was a ton of on the job, deep end of the pool training.
Right.
And for probably the first 6 weeks, it seemed like something catastrophic happened every Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how to fix it because I'd never been around something like that breaking before. You know, so during the week, I'm like, man, I hope stuff breaks during a midweek service or during office hours so I can figure out how it works and take it apart. So that's what I'm doing during the week. Is where does this cable go? What does it do? But every time something would go wrong, it was like, man, I know these people are thinking, who is this clown that we hired that doesn't have a clue what he's doing? Like I had zero self-confidence. Zero self-esteem. Like the idea of Sundays would fill me with so much anxiety over the weekend that like it would affect how I ate and slept leading up to Sunday just because I didn't know how to do what I was supposed to be doing.
Right.
And it was it was a solid 6 months of that level of anxiety. But it was like the goal the first year was just to not die on the job. Like I felt like Indiana Jones, I think it was Temple of Doom, where the big rock is like chasing him, yeah. You know, it's rolling after him. That's how I felt. It's like, just don't get run over by the rock.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And then year two became, okay, I'm not going to get run over. Just try to sustain the pace of the rock.
Right.
It probably wasn't until I was starting my third year that I really felt comfortable and confident enough to where I could start having vision for where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do.
Well, that's not like getting into the deep end of the pool. That's like driving a car at 100 miles an hour into the water.
And so, because seriously, like the first year or two was just, I have to be able to survive.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to sustain myself week after week. And we were still growing. Like 6 months in, I was able to make my first hire. It was a position that was already approved, you know, and then the following year we added another one. And then the following year, maybe we added two more and we're adding a campus or two each year. So we're growing and I'm needing to add people. And now I've absorbed the lighting department, you know, and we've got more campuses. And by the time we hit 2011, we've started online streaming, and I'm overseeing all of that. So my oversight is growing, and I'm having to figure out just how to maintain all this and just keep pace with everything. I'd gotten married in the middle of all that, of a couple of major construction projects. I've never managed a construction project, and here I am managing the AVL install for a 1,000-seat youth auditorium, and now we're building a campus building. I've never done that before. So we're doing all of these things that I'm trying to figure out on the job. How do we launch a portable campus? Heck if I know, you know? And so it wasn't until I'd been in this for a couple years before I finally felt like I could breathe and even stop long enough to figure out not how do I sustain what we're doing, right, but how do I grow this and actually make it better? Where do I want to take this thing? You know, yeah, where can we improve? Like for a long time, I was just living off of the systems that had been put in place before I got there because I didn't know any better.
Right.
You know, and it took time for me to feel comfortable enough with like, okay, this isn't the best way to do this. I've got to stop doing it just because that's how it was done before I got here. I now feel secure and confident enough in myself to where I can bring something new to the table and can own it. And I've got buy-in and we can go in this direction. You know, we can move to planning center for scheduling and service flow, or we can start doing training a different way or whatever. Like I can start taking this to a new level. And that then is what the next several years became, is how do we grow and improve what we're doing? So as I felt more confident as a person in my own skin, as a leader and a technician and a service producer, it made it easier to start taking more steps.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, that's super interesting. I think there's always going to be a transition between focusing on yourself and just being able to do the job. And then there's a moment where you go, okay, now I have to not focus on me. I have to focus on vision. I have to focus on volunteers. I have to focus on where we're going and where do we want to take this? How do I align the technical ministry with the vision of the church and actually start thinking those thoughts, not just, you know, going. And I think that kind of rolls all the way back to where we started at the beginning with so many conversations that we're all having during the whole pandemic is, got a lot of people who their whole ministry structure got upended, and now they're just going 300 miles an hour, and they're not thinking about like down the road. So what advice would you give the young production manager, tech director, whether they be volunteer or, you know, or staff? What kind of advice would you give to say, hey, look, this thing's going to be going on a while. It could end at the end of the year. It could go on for another year. We have no idea. We have no idea. And we're not in control of that. What do people need to start? How do people need to start thinking to keep their pace, to be able to grow and to be able to have some, I wouldn't say normalcy, because I don't like any of that, because I don't, whatever the, you know, the phrases I want stricken out of this whole thing is new normal. I hate that phrase. I absolutely hate it. And, but what, you know, there's going to be the next, well, this is what it is. How do we get from where we are now to there? Do you think, what steps are you taking to not burn yourself out and your teams out and still be moving forward in the ministry?
Yeah, you know, so I think back to my first years on the job, some of the mistakes I made. One was because I was single, is the idea of boundaries weren't really a thing. Like working 70 hours a week or whatever wasn't a problem because I didn't have a spouse to go home to. I didn't have a family. I didn't own a house. And so I didn't have a yard to mow. You know, my family was in my parents, you know, were in a different state. I didn't have a ton of hobbies at the time. So it's like, so I didn't mind doing a lot of things. And then you get married, and an inability to have boundaries does a lot of damage right out the gate. Right. And I think for anybody in any season of life, whether you're married with a family or not, being unable to set boundaries for yourself can cause a lot of damage because, you know, my life shouldn't revolve around work. I should have other things in my life that get me excited so that I have a reason to leave work. I need to have hobbies I look forward to, or people I look forward to seeing, or a family I look forward to spending time with. Otherwise, I'm never going to go anywhere. And so, if my desire is to stay at work all the time, that's probably a sign that I'm not investing enough in myself outside of work. I don't have anything else that brings me pleasure or joy, and I need to find that.
Yeah.
Because my ability to find pleasure in life shouldn't revolve around one environment, you know, like I need to have my eggs in multiple baskets, I suppose. But I also, you know, learned over years is the importance of protecting time for myself, not just to keep myself spiritually healthy, which we all know should be a priority, but I had to protect time to develop vision and to dream, because we can get so busy and wrapped up in just maintaining things day after day after day, that if we don't intentionally put time and effort into changing and expanding and doing it differently, then time is going to pass and nothing will have ever changed. It was the reality I read years ago. It became one of my favorite leadership books, but the John Maxwell book, Today Matters, which is the idea that today matters because I have the ability to make intentional decisions today that, if compounded over time, can dramatically affect my future.
Right.
And so every day I need to be making intentional decisions for how I'm going to grow or improve as a person, as a spouse, as a Christian, as an employee, as a boss, whatever. But if I'm not doing things on a day-to-day basis, I have no right to hope that my life will ever be better or any different. And so it even becomes that way with my job. Like, if I don't have time dedicated to learning the industry, honing my craft, researching new things, networking, talking to other people, going to trade shows, reading magazines, listening to podcasts, if that's not a priority, then I can never, ever expect new ideas to come to my mind. I can never expect our environment to get any better, because all I know how to do is the same thing I've always done. Right. All I know how to do is sustain what I know is normal. And I'm never going to know everything. And so I have to understand that in order to learn and make myself better, I've got to be exposed to new things. And so I had to put intentional effort into stretching myself to learn what the industry was doing, to learn what peers were doing, manufacturers were doing, whatever. Because it's this realization that in our world, we are the tip of the ministry spear. Our church can't do anything without the technology sector right now leading the way.
Right.
Whether it's a new building or a campus or a streaming thing or an outdoor service or a drive-in thing, like, there's nothing that can happen right now without a technology footprint.
Right.
And if I am not growing and exposing myself to new things and getting better and understanding the industry and new ideas, then that means our ministry's vision will always be limited to my skill set, mm-hmm. which means I, at that point, am keeping our ministry leadership from reaching the vision that they have just because I don't know how to get there.
Right.
So my goal then is for our team to have a knowledge base beyond what we are currently doing, so that when new vision comes to the table, that vision moves into the knowledge gap we already have created, because we are beyond where we currently, we have grown beyond our current needs. And so as the needs grow, they're just stepping into this gap of knowledge that we have already accumulated to make sure that we as a team are ahead of where the church needs to go.
Right.
So I have to understand technology that we are not capable of using right now, knowing that someday we might need to get there. And so I need to know who's ahead of me. And that may not be in the church world. It may be in the secular world, or it may be a business or a movie production house, or
right.
a bank, or like a sporting venue that does something. I don't know. But I have to keep myself ahead of where the church is going, because I've got to understand the weight that is now on our team and what we do. And I do not want to be the reason why we can't accomplish something, because I also have the understanding that I am specifically here for a reason and for a season. All of us in our roles at our ministry are the same way. We are here because God knew that we were the perfect person to do this thing at this time with this skill set. God is not into redundancy. He's not into second best. He makes everything work for the good. I would not be here if I was not the best person for this role at this point on the timeline of human history.
Right.
But there is going to come a day that I am no longer the best fit for this role. Like Winston Churchill was the best possible wartime leader for Britain. But as soon as the war ended, Britain needed a new personality to lead. He was right. No longer the best fit for their new reality.
Right.
And there is going to come a day that I am no longer the best fit for this job. It's a question of whether I am no longer the best fit because I'm called to go somewhere else because that's where I'm needed, or whether I'm no longer the fit because I am the obstacle that is keeping the church from reaching the vision inside my ministry leaders' hearts. Right. And there is no choice but for them to move me out of the way because I am keeping them from going where they need to go.
Right. And I think, you know, this, I have always told, well, not always, but in the last, you know, several jobs that I've had, I've told my, the person that was hiring me or my boss or whoever, right. That I said, look, if we get to a point where you feel that I'm not the right person for this job, please tell me right away. Don't wait. I want to know, because either I have a choice to make, either I can adapt to be that person or I can move on and yep. step out of the way and let the next person come in that God has. Cause I don't want to be the stumbling block in this in either way for my life or for the life of the organization.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not it. You're not to just have a job. I mean, yes, you need to have a job. You need to feed your family. You need all that stuff. But you know, you want to be able to be the contributing factor in that. So,
yeah. And there becomes a point where people miss the target because they either can't hit the target or they won't hit the target.
Right.
A won't issue, that's an attitude problem. I am not willing to take the steps necessary to do what has been asked of me. Right. I won't learn it. I won't change. I won't grow. I won't adapt. There is something internal in me that will not let me get to the point where I'm willing to do that. That's right. A problem.
Yeah.
If I can't do something, and this is the same filter I look through for employees on my team as we're trying to figure out, are people struggling? Why are people, might people be struggling in their role? If I can't hit the target, it's a question of, is it an aptitude thing? I just simply do not have the skill necessary to go to that next level, which is fine. Like people will, we all have a ceiling on what our abilities are. If I can't do something, I'm not capable of it. That's okay. You know,
right.
The other piece is, can I not get there just because I haven't had the right exposure to the right resources or training or mentoring or coaching? I have the desire and I believe I have the ability to learn it. I just haven't been exposed to the right things.
Right.
Well, at the end of the day, I control a lot more of my future than I think I do.
Yeah.
Like if I keep my attitude in the right place and if I make sure that I am constantly pursuing resources to expose me to new things, to help me to grow and develop as a person and a leader, that's how I can fend off this can't and won't issue. So that I not only have a willing attitude to pursue it, but I also am developing the aptitude inside me so that I can become who the organization needs me to be. And if I realize that I physically cannot do what I'm being asked to do, well, then do I have the ability to develop other people so that they can do those things? Maybe right. There's a way to scratch that itch without it all falling on my shoulders. Can I mentor or develop somebody else who has a more natural competence in that area? And that's something that I've had to do. You know, in the 11 years here, when I've looked through the filter of how to bring people on our team, there were two things that I've looked at. One is, what are the things that I am just straight up not good at? I do not have the natural aptitude or gifting or ability to do this at the level it requires. And right. So I need to find somebody that has strengths that offset my weaknesses. Can I bring somebody in to complement me? And a lot of times as leaders, we feel insecure because if I find somebody that's good at something I'm not, it makes me look bad. Or right. they may take my job, or they may get my influence. But one of the greatest assets of a leader is self-awareness, to know what I'm good at and to be secure enough in knowing that it says more about my value that I can find those people than that I run away from those people. That they like, I don't want them to challenge or threaten me. Like, they compliment me. Like, right. we can work well together. We can make the organization better. I'm secure bringing you along because you're good at something.
Right.
But the other thing I've looked at is, what are the things that need energy and effort and time? I just don't have the bandwidth to do it. Like, I don't, like, I would love to do it. I believe I can do it. I just don't have the ability to get the resources, the time, the energy to get there. So it could either be 5% of my job description, or it could be 60% of somebody else's job description, and could get a whole heck of a lot more focus and energy. And that's what's going to take it to the next level. Yeah. So how can I find somebody that can do that thing? And that has been hard for me at times, because I've had to give up things that I enjoyed doing.
Right.
I just didn't have the time to devote to them that they really truly deserved. And I had to be willing to let go and say, it's not about me and what I want to do. It's about how to make the organization better. I need somebody that can give this the energy that I can't. I've got to be willing to let go.
Well, and I think that's what happens with a lot of production managers, tech directors, worship pastors, and senior pastors. I think everybody that is in these jobs that's really good at what they do has a tendency to not let stuff go to allow other people to come into the fullness of what they're yeah. doing. You know, I mean, that was a big thing for me, is I love watching, I love passing the torch on to somebody else. It's hard sometimes, but it is very gratifying when you find that right person that God's brought into your ministry, that is that person that's going to be able to take that chunk of what you do and just run with it, you know?
Yeah. You know, one of the quotes that I'll never forget from our longtime friend Andrew Stone was that sometimes my presence overshadows somebody else's greatness.
Yeah.
Because I'm yeah. around and I stick my hand in it, or other people see me and they come to me because of my position. Me being inserted into the process sometimes keeps other people from having the opportunity to shine at things they're really good at or things they really enjoy. And so I'll never know somebody's potential ceiling if I'm not willing to step back and give other people the chance to do things.
Yeah. And let them fail. And
absolutely.
And let them fail, you know, and at that point,
and that's hard.
Yeah. Our job, I always feel like our job at that point is to create a safety net so that they can fail in an environment where it teaches them, they feel the burn, they feel the sting of failure, but it doesn't, of course, you know, tip wreck the ship into an iceberg and the whole thing goes down.
Sure.
But I mean, that is really your job as a leader, is to make that all happen, but allow people to go into their fullness, to walk away, to not be there on a Saturday night when you've trained up a assistant production manager, assistant tech director, to go, I'm going to start taking Saturday nights off. Because you're in charge, or whatever, you know, whatever that means. You have to, sometimes sure. you have to just step away. And if things didn't go perfectly right, you got to be like, okay, well, you know what? What'd you learn? What'd you know? When I worked at Mariners, Kenton Beecher, who was the pastor there for 30 some years, he used to ask the staff all the time. He'd said every question about every event was, what'd you see? What'd you learn? Like, those are the first two things out of his mouth. What'd you see? What'd you learn? And you had to have an answer because he was going to grill you until you did.
Yeah.
So I think if you allow people to see and learn from their mistakes without you hovering over them, you have the potential to raise up some really great people.
Yeah. But there's also, you know, the expectation too, that I have to be able to create a security blanket for both sides. Like, I'm holding two people's hands during that process. I'm holding the hand of the senior leader that has to trust me. but I'm also holding the hand of the young Padawan that has to trust me.
Right.
And so I have to be on a process, an intentional process over time of creating comfort in both of them to where both sides have a sense of security that this could work, you know? So it's not just a, oh great, we're going to give this guy a shot and then I'm going to peace out, you know, like that's going to do more damage than good at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, you have to, you know, and I think you have to be strategic about it. I mean, you know, before I would do any of that, I would always go to my senior leadership and say, here's what's happening, just so you know.
Yeah.
And the reason we're doing this is because you have commissioned me to build teams. And this is one of the ways I'm building leadership teams is these ways.
Yeah.
So I want you to know, this is what I have. This is the mechanism that this is working in. This is how I'm keeping tabs on it. There is a percentage of failure that might happen, but it's within our margin and we're good. But know that this is why I'm doing it. When you do that, your leadership goes, oh, okay, I understand what's happening. The worst thing you can do is to start doing all this stuff and not clue your leadership in on stuff that they are going to be able to see.
Yeah.
In your absence.
Really, really, it boils down to, like, if you present a plan, honestly, for anything, whether it's a transition plan or a budget or a capital expenditure, like if you present a plan proactively, it's going to be really hard for people to tell you no.
Yeah.
Because it shows that you have put thought into it. It's well-reasoned. It's not haphazard. It's intentional. You're thinking things out. You're considering possibilities. And so that in and of itself, the preparation side is going to lead to some sense of trust or confidence of, okay, well, I mean, if you feel like that's going to work and you've thought it out and you've got ideas of how to communicate and debrief, okay, well then, yeah, I'm okay giving it a shot.
Yeah. Well, you're always going to have to wing it in live events. I mean, there's always a little bit of winging it, and that's where your talent and your experience comes in, but you cannot go into things without a plan. You can't. You know, I'm kind of person that in, you know, just left to myself, I'll just wing it. I'll fly by the seat of my pants all the time. But in my days as a technical director, I was very organized. I was a very plan centric. I always had a plan, always had a backup plan, the whole shot, because you have to, you can't just make it up as you're going along with everything, because you will not have trust. Your leadership will not have trust in you if they don't know what's happening.
Yep. And that's where communication is such a critical part of what we do. Whether it's proactive, whether it's reactive, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Sometimes, you know, we're so, you know, introverted or self-conscious or whatever, we can feel hesitant about initiating a conversation or bringing up bad news or whatever else, but that doesn't diminish the importance of it. And I heard somebody say a while back, and I can't even do it justice because I can't use the right words, but a lot of times we avoid having conversations with people because of the discomfort that we feel in those moments.
Right.
And it's really a selfish way to approach it. It's saying that how I feel for these 3 minutes of this conversation, that is worth more than whatever long-term benefits could come out of this and how it has a chance to positively impact other people or the organization.
Right.
Forget other people, forget the long-term. I'm going to feel uncomfortable for 3 minutes. Therefore, I'm not going to have this conversation.
Yeah.
It really is. I'm putting my own feelings ahead of the organization or the team, which can be very destructive.
Well, and that's just in relationships in life.
Sure.
I mean, I could equate that with marriage. The amount of times that I didn't want to have conversations, wanted to have conversations with my wife because of that 3 minutes of being uncomfortable, but it would have lasting ripple effects if I didn't have that conversation, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think that's a huge takeaway.
And honestly, it's the same as having a conversation with volunteers that are struggling or whatever else. Sometimes we're afraid of offending people or pushing them away.
Yep.
And we do them a disservice by not giving them necessary, grace-filled, life-giving feedback.
Yeah.
And because we're abdicating our chance to coach them, that has a chance to become a negative thing that reproduces itself in them again over time. And it could affect them in other ways. There's no way to know.
Yeah. And you have to have, and the way to do that is, I mean, honestly, is you have to build a rapport with your volunteers so that when you do have to have those hard conversations, they know that you love them, that you're looking out for them, that you're on their team, that you're in their corner, but you'll have to have those hard conversations. I mean, I'm sure you remember this. I remember the very first time I had to fire a volunteer, you know, and the painful process that it was. But in the 20 years I was in full-time ministry, I fired many volunteers and fired staff too. And those are hard conversations to have, but if you don't have them, you're just, you know, and I have seen on teams where I've visited churches and know friends that have team members that have hijacked their ministry because that tech director does not want to have the conversation.
Yep. It ends up affecting everybody around them.
Poisons the water hole, and other good people will leave eventually if you don't take care of that. Yep. And I've seen some very unhealthy teams because those things did not happen because the leader was afraid of the discomfort of that. And leadership is not for the meek. So, well, Justin, you and I could talk for many hours.
Absolutely.
So yeah. What's on the horizon? So here's the deal again. The coronavirus strikes again. Tomorrow could be totally different. You know, in a month, yeah. Alabama could lock down again. You know, every day here in California is a new day. I'm sure nobody follows California, but for those of who do, California is all over the map. Like one day we're cool and the next day we're not cool. And there's people suing the government and it's insane. But just given what you guys kind of see as your plan moving forward, how are you moving forward with how much online content are you just going to keep doing now?
Yeah.
Versus, you know, slowly moving back, and like, are there markers you guys are looking for? What are you doing?
Yeah. At this point, I don't know if there are specific markers per se. We do have plans to continue offering in-person services, and not really backing away from that. The idea is that because we have so many campuses, if there is a health-related issue in some part of the state or another, that those campuses have the ability, like if they need to, you know, shut down for a couple of weeks because of what's happening in their local community, there's flexibility to do that, but others in other parts of the state that might not be affected that same way, they could continue, you know, meeting in person as long as it's feasible there. So, right. So hopefully the Sunday experience continues to have an in-person feel. We do have other things that, that are going to be either a hybrid approach or, online only. There are some things that, so we tend to have a couple of big conferences in the fall, but just because of crowds and things like that, there's no way that that would work in a distanced environment. So that's going to be online only as an experience, just because
but you are going to still have the conference and just do it online.
Correct. Yeah. So we'll just pivot to online instead of trying to figure out how to, you know, we're only going to let this many people in and how do you even give them a good experience for something, or you can put all of your energy into the online thing and make it as great as possible.
Right.
There are other things that we're going to be doing a hybrid approach, like church membership classes and things like that. We'll have in-person opportunities and online opportunities based on what your flow is. You know, we're finally going to be taking steps to do more kids curriculum online, which is something I've advocated for a really long time. I think it gets forgotten about at a lot of churches, and some of it may be because a lot of churches use other curriculum they don't have licensing for. But like, if mom and dad miss Sunday service, we can go watch the on-demand archive later.
Right.
But my kid can't go back and watch whatever it was. So children, you know, don't have the opportunity in many cases for a regular, consistent worship experience in an online world.
Right.
And we're really trying to change that. We've been creating our own kids content for a long time so that we don't have licensing issues to post that. We're trying to do more, you know, kids 1-year Bible type stuff to where they can have access to more resources, just like, you know, parents would. So hopefully that continues trying to reach a very necessary segment of society that honestly, a lot of times in programming gets overlooked.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll also, again, like I feel like we're going to be in this flow, you know, for the better part of, you know, 9 to 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, Corona's not going away. She's here. She's here to stay. Like there are only like a couple of viruses right now that haven't been eradicated.
Right.
You know, and so it's like the odds of it being fully eradicated and completely disappearing are infinitesimal. So it's going to be here. We just have to learn how to deal with it. And it's going to be a really long time before people feel comfortable coming in person, whether that's due to how testing is done or vaccines or something, like who knows.
Right.
And so we have to be able to provide a quality experience for both audiences, those that feel comfortable coming and those that don't. We can't pursue one at the expense of the other.
Right.
So cool. Just got to figure out how to keep them all happy. Serve two masters.
Well, and that's, you know, and just so you guys know, one of the reasons that, that I asked that question is because, you know, it doesn't matter if your church is, you know, 50 people or 50,000 people. These are issues that every church is dealing with. Every single church is dealing with this. And so, and you know, it's, and every church is dealing with it a little bit different, but it is going to have to be dealt with. So,
yeah. And, you know, and you hit it there. Every church is dealing with it differently. There is no one size fits all approach to any of this, you know? So what works for one church may not work for another one, you know, just because one church is still online, that doesn't mean that that's the exclusive answer, or just because one is meeting in person, that doesn't mean that's the answer. You know, you, at some level you have to trust that leadership is making the best decision they can given the information at their disposal and how their community is being affected. And so we're just, at the end of the day, we're just trying to do everything we can to make resources and options available so that whatever direction our leaders decide to go, we are prepared to pivot as needed.
Right.
You know, we already have solutions and ideas ready for how to make it work.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, Justin, as usual, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. We could do this for hours and hours.
Trust me, I know I could, because in my broadcasting days, I have broadcasted a baseball triple header
and a
basketball quadruple header.
Yeah.
And so I have experience talking for 10 hours straight to myself. So,
well, and most people think that I talk for 10 hours straight every day. So that's, there we go. But, you know, a lot of the crack at that I always say is a lot of these podcasts are just so that friends that have long distances, we can get together and hang out. And if somebody wants to listen, then fantastic. That's great.
Yeah. Otherwise, at least you and I had a fun time talking to each other.
That's right. Absolutely. So, if people want to, now, for those of you who don't know, like I said, I know pretty much everybody knows who Justin is, but if Justin is just honestly, a person that loves the church and loves church techs and wants you to succeed in your ministry, in your church, no matter where you are, what you're doing, he has spent countless hours just being involved with, you know, church tech leadership and, I don't know, man, WFX and on and on and on and on and on. Just all the conferences that we've been at together. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, has a question, whatever, what's that good way of getting a hold of you?
Well, and first off, let me say, if you don't know who I am, that's okay. Like that doesn't offend me.
Well, you should know now. Here's the thing.
Don't feel like you're supposed to have heard from me. I'm just a guy that shows up from time to time.
Here's the thing. They do now. They know who you are.
Yeah, there
now.
You go.
So,
there
you go. So there you go.
Yeah. So best ways to get in touch with me, please don't send me messages on Facebook. I really don't want to swim in those waters more than I have to.
No one does.
Email is going to be the best way. So that's my last name, which is Fire Sheets. Fire, like set it on fire, sheets, like sheets on a bed, Fire Sheets at churchofthehighlands.com. Fire Sheets at churchofthehighlands.com. Feel free to drop me an email. Would love to get connected with you. Or honestly, if you need help getting connected with other churches across the country, or you're you know, I'd love to talk to somebody else in my area. Do you have suggestions, or do you have resources you would recommend that I, you know, find a podcast or conferences to go to or whatever? Like, I'd love to help point you in whatever direction I can. I was very blessed early on in my tenure here, that there were guys at some other churches that were very willing to take my calls and answer my emails and help me out. And so I want to do everything I can to try to be that person for other people, not suggesting that I know everything or have all the answers or am the smartest person in the world. But if there's anything I can pass along that I've learned from experience or whatever, I would love to do that. I also like, I know people in our industry need relational connection with somebody. As many of us don't know where to go to start that, or we feel intimidated by cold calling somebody, or I don't know who to reach out to, or there's no way they would want to talk to me because I'm at East Bumblefuzz Independent Holiness Presbyterian Church of our Lord and Savior, and they've never heard of me. And so, you know, who am I? Like, I know people need the connection. I love just getting to know people and being a matchmaker and helping them feel like they're able to talk to somebody. I don't know. It's just something.
Well, and to be honest, that's how all of us who do all these podcasts and do conferences, that's kind of all how we all met. We met just by reaching out to other folks to get to know, like, you know, to get to know people. How do I do this? Or, man, I don't know. You know, my dad always said that, and this is of course an old guy saying so, but I'm an old guy now, so I can say it. Is that, you know, just that you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You just have to have a good Rolodex full of people who are smarter than you that'll take your call.
Yeah, you know, and what drove that for me is the first all staff meeting I was in here at Highlands. I heard our pastor say that he expected everybody on staff to know at least 3 to 5 people at other churches that did our job better than we did. And at the time, I couldn't even have named 3 to 5 other churches, period. Forget people at churches. Like, I didn't know the church world. And so I thought, holy cow, what am I going to do if he ever calls on me in a staff meeting and asks, who are you learning from? Right. So I took it seriously. It's like, I am going to do everything I can to try to meet people. And so I'm normally not a cold call kind of a guy. I don't feel comfortable just reaching out to random people. That's just not my flow. But I had to decide, you know what? I'm going to force myself to be outgoing and build relationships. So when I would go to conferences, I would stick around after a class and go meet the person that was leading that class and say, hey, who else in this industry should I know? Who do you recommend right. that I meet? Who would be a good person for me to talk to? Or, you know, I'd go somewhere and there was a panel of people and I'd try to track down everybody that was on the panel and ask, Can I talk to you after this? Like, are you okay if I call you or email you when we get back to our respective cities and ask you a lot of questions? And I still do that now. Like, there are guys all over the country that I reach out to and say, hey, can I just ask you about your workflow and what you're doing and how you do stuff? Like, you can learn from anybody.
Yeah. And big, you know, that is one thing. That was one thing that, you know, that Rick Warren, when I was at Saddleback, he always really pushed into us as a staff is don't learn from people that are on at churches that are 1% of the size of our church. If that person has a good idea, take it. It does not matter what size their church is. He would always say, I learned from pastors of 50 people. He goes, I listen to them. And if they have a great, he goes, I write that down. That is a great idea. How can I implement that? He says, never, ever stop learning from everyone that you can and don't be afraid and don't look down on people who maybe are, have a smaller church or do something different or whatever, just learn and connect. Yep. And that is, that's the biggest thing. So yeah, you're definitely that. I mean, I don't even remember how we met, to be honest.
So my guess is because this is where I met a bunch of guys. My guess is that you were on the panel at the Tech Directors Retreat at WFX in Dallas of 2011. That's my guess.
Maybe
here's why, because leading up to a year, you're like, I don't know. I don't remember. So at one of the first WFXs I went to, I met Anthony Coppedge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, who are 3 people in this industry that I need to get to know? Because you seem like a well-connected guy. And the three names he gave me were Mike Sessler, Bill Swearingen, and Dennis Choi.
Right. Yep.
And all three of those guys are very well involved in roundtable things and gatherings and networking and whatever.
Yep.
And through Bill and Dennis, I learned about the tech director's retreat at WFX Dallas for 2011. And Dennis was leading that. And I'd met him maybe a month before that.
Yeah.
And so the way, here's this funny, the way they did it at the time, there were two sessions. There was a morning session for 3 hours and then an afternoon session for like 3 hours.
Right. Yeah.
Or 4 hours, whatever.
Yeah.
And you could pick one. And I decided to register for both. And the WFX people were like, is there a mistake? Like, no, I was like, no, trust me. I'm doing this on purpose.
Yeah.
The reason why is like the panel of that gathering that included, you know, Bill and Dennis, I'm pretty sure you were there, but Todd Elliott was there. Greg Baker was there.
Yeah.
Micah Stevens was there. Greg Backus was there. Dave Clark from Fellowship.
Anyway, there
were probably three or four other guys that, you know, if I thought about it, I could remember, but they're heavy hitters from big churches. And I was like, these are the people that I need to get to know. And I need to be around these guys. Yeah. And so I'm going to go to both sessions of this roundtable thing because the Q&A from the audience might be different and I want to hear everything imaginable. And so I'm there and these guys are like, weren't you here this morning? Yep. Why are you still here? Because I'm trying to meet people. Yeah. And so I got everybody's contact info and doing follow-up calls with folks and ended up building some great relationships from people that were part of that. But it's like, you know, and at the time, honestly, Highlands was bigger than probably half the churches on that panel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't care if people knew that. They didn't know who I was. You know, I didn't know who they were. But it was like, I can learn from anybody and I need to figure out who to get around that can teach me something because there's a lot that I don't know at this point.
Well, and I think too, you know, one of the cool things for me is always trying to get, you know, Mike and I for so long were also in the business of who do we have on the podcast, you know, who's the next guest on the podcast. So we were always out looking for who's that gem, who's that diamond in the rough that we haven't met yet that we can have on the podcast that's got some cool stuff that they can say and that we can learn from. Honestly, you know, that was really what Church Tech Weekly, a lot of it was so that Mike and I could meet people that we wanted to learn from. And that's a great way of doing it is to have people on your podcast. And then you get to talk to them and ask them all kinds of questions. And it's the truth. It's honestly the truth. You know, so anyway, well, Justin, as usual, always great to talk with you and much success in everything you're doing. I know it's a crazy time for you, but I will tell you this. My opinion is if you are going to folks, when you're those of you who are listening to this, if you are going to look at a person or listen to a person that is a good time manager, you know, most of the time, and who has really got his act together as far as teams and his passion for ministry and kind of how things are executed, this is the guy. So follow him on Twitter, Instagram, whatever, you know, read blogs that he's written, you know, just look him up and Google him, and he's written all kinds of articles and everything like that. And he's got some great information and great resources, and he's got a true passion for our tribe and what we do. So thank you guys for listening. We will have another great interview here in the next week or so. So please spread the word. Go to our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, like, subscribe, blah, 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 all those things. And all those things you do on the interwebs.
Yeah, there you go.
And spread the word, because I want to get as many people listening to this as possible. And I want to get more people I don't even know on this podcast as possible that are doing great work for the Lord in technical ministry. So we will talk to you all later. Stay safe and have a great one.